I'm Pave Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into a new week of Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. Make sure to like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Get all the notifications when we go live Monday through Friday at this time. Sean, how was your weekend? How we feeling? Another good weekend of football. We had some blowouts. Maybe the NFL wasn't as good as we were hoping it was going to be, but we had some really good games as well. So how are you feeling coming out of the weekend?
Some high scoring stuff, some really good performances. Even in some high scoring games, we had some pretty good plays on defense, but injuries were the story this weekend around the league for teams that are going to be in it and that aren't. I'm sure we'll hit on those before this is over without speculation. And I thought it was there were some teams in it that you understand why in December they're still kicking ass. You saw it from the Rams. Detroit hung around. We saw it in the Buffalo-New England game, resilience. We'll get to all that. But the one last night showed me something. The Vikings, nothing to play for other than pride and getting better because they're out. They found out before the game they were out of the playoffs mathematically. The Cowboys are not mathematically eliminated Segs, but they may as well be. Take a miracle to get in. I am shocked. America's team, the lack of energy. I know it was tied through part of it, but you're at home. You won three in a row. Then now you lose to Detroit, which I get. Then you come back and lose to a Viking team that's reeling with a young quarterback who hadn't been able to get into a full season rhythm. He protects the ball, uses his legs, was accurate. That's how many times O'Connell wants to throw with him in that 25 to 28 range, and they did. He was efficient. He looks like he's going to be a player. He's a long ways away. The Dallas Cowboys' lack of energy or focus is an embarrassment. And once again, when one of the receivers disappears and that team – they got pushed around by the Vikings, which Vikings haven't done much this year.
Yeah, I mean, 34-26, a high-scoring game. I think if we thought somebody was going to score 30-plus points, it was the Cowboys. But the Vikings come out and play decent football. And as you mentioned, McCarthy's playing some decent football the last couple games. He's showing that he can at least be competent because there was times we were wondering if he was even going to be competent in the NFL. But he's shown the last couple games at least to – move the needle a little bit, I guess. But yeah, Cowboys out of the playoffs for them. I mean, it's 99.
A miracle. They're still mathematically alive, but they're done.
Yes,
they're
they fine. Would need a miracle.
Especially with the enthusiasm or lack thereof, Segs. They don't, there's nothing that tells you in their game that they're as a group in any grouping, there's nothing that tells you that this is a priority for them other than taking an ass kicking from teams they're not supposed to.
Yeah, you have the Chargers, Commanders, and Giants left, so I guess they could win out, but they still need Philly to lose out and a bunch of other stuff to happen to even have a shot. So Cowboys essentially out, and you mentioned the Vikings are out of the playoffs as well. But
I like where McCarthy's headed with his game, considering he hasn't been able to play as a rookie and has had some, banged up with concussion this year. Looks like he's starting to get into a rhythm. His preparation will be, will serve him well going forward.
All right, well, let's get to Coach JB. He joins us every Monday, as he always does.
Yeah, JB, welcome in. Love it. We had him late last week because of a schedule, and we'll get him on early this week. Let me get it right. It's at Coach JB. It's at the real Coach _ JB. You're too popular. I got it right last. You're too popular to have an underscore in your
name. I wish I wouldn't have had the underscore, man. You know, the problem is when I created it on Netflix years ago, because I didn't do social media, they did that because if somebody else had it or something.
Well, you know, there's only one JB, dog. It's the underscore. I know you're the real coach, JB. Right. Right. I mean, the JB show know all about it. The underscore gets me. And I'm actually, next time they tell you to underscore, I tell them
that's your fucking what. Kryptonite, by the way.
Underscore, he's nuts. It is. Dude, I've known you forever. And I get everything but the way it's lined up in your damn real coach underscore JB. There you go.
Damn near communism.
It really is. But you know what? What is it having you on? I see your shirt. We'll get to them in the Mahomes situation. But let me start with last night. Not that either team's going anywhere. JB, from a coaching standpoint, which you have done, and you got a national championship ring to boot, what do you see from them energy-wise? They can't year in and year out be this bad. When I say this bad, where they just kind of flounder. After three in a row, we thought they're coming around. Now the last two games, it looks like they want to go home. Why?
I don't believe you have the quarterback, number one, overpaid under the delivery.
You really think it's him, JB? You really think it's him? Look at that roster.
You can't make layups, Sean. If you miss layups, you know better than anybody. If you miss layups, how good can you really be? Like, how sustainable is it, I guess? I guess he's a talent. I get it. He puts up numbers. Regular season quarterback extraordinaire. But, like, if you miss routine layups at quarterback – for all the guys out here that don't know what that means, making a common throw and a casual throw consistently, they can't make it. In the quarterback world that we live in nowadays, with RPO and everything behind or at the line of scrimmage, as far as getting the ball out, lateral, extended run plays, and he can't make a play when it matters. And I don't see any quarterback. So there's a reason there's a 44-year-old being called up to play when we have zero farm league system anymore, which used to be college football development of players who used to be backups in the NFL that we can put right in and have been there a few years, i.e. Aaron Rodgers to Brett Favre, Tom Brady to Bledsoe, Mahomes to Alex Smith, you to whoever. Who was with you? How many guys? Jim McMahon? Like, Warren I don't Moon, understand. Warren Moon, Matt Johnson. Like, where is that at? We now get drafted, Sean, and they have to play right now. We gotta fill the stands. We're a bad organization. We got to play Caleb Williams right out the gate. And all these guys, you got to play. Tennessee, look what they're doing to this kid. I don't know if there is – we've lost the development part of this league. And quarterback position, I've been telling you for 5 years, is the worst I've ever seen. And it shows, because the 44-year-old came in and – threw for 120 yards, Sean. He didn't embarrass himself, but he looked 44. I mean, the ball can't get out. He can't throw a deep out cut. He can't throw anything worth NFL worthy anymore. And I don't know where we are in the NFL, man. We're in a bad spot. And I think Dak Prescott and the Cowboys are basically the poster child of that, because you're overpaid under deliverers. They have five players, Sean, that are in the top five of their respective positions on the pay scale.
Right.
Lamb, Pickens, a guy that's not even playing in Diggs, the corner, who drops more picks than he catches. And then you got Dak Prescott. So, Sean, I don't know where you go with this roster and how you
would you clean house? Are they fire sale? Are they at the fire sale point where start to just get rid of it, get rid of some of these big dogs, get rid of some salary? Are we really at the Cowboys need to accumulate assets that we talk about, like with the Jets and the rest of them? Not because they're that bad, but because at times they look that bad, and they still, we're mid-90s away from a team that's been to the Super Bowl. When will they get it?
Yeah, I don't know what you do. You really are sold on Dak Prescott. Let's say you got everybody else. You keep Dak Prescott. Aren't you doing the same thing over and over and expect a different result? Who are you putting around Dak Prescott that's getting them over the hump? You can't get two more, like, much better wideouts than they have. I mean, these are two of the best, I don't know, you could argue the best tandem in football if they're all on and not being shitbirds that day and they want to focus in. And
just
not,
talent alone. Just pure talent alone. Yeah, no doubt.
I don't know if there's better. You got a good, pretty damn good tight end. He's pretty damn good, Ferguson. You got an upcoming back, I think. A Williams kid. I think he does great. I think he's a big-time back. Your O-line's not as good as you're accustomed to in Dallas. Your defense is horrific, Sean. I mean, this is the worst defense I've seen Cowboy team in a long time. Your back row can't guard nobody. You can't get a pass rush. And I get why And since they got Quentin Williams, they've been better. But then, you know, and it looked like he was playing chess when everybody was playing checkers. Jerry Jones, that means, when he got rid of, you know, Micah Parsons. And you can still argue they won that trade. You can still argue it if you really want to for the future. They won the trade. But here we go. Now Micah gets hurt in Green Bay, and now people are going to say, well, Dallas did get lucky and won the trade. Well, yeah, but you're also not a playoff team. Green Bay is. So there's a huge issue in this in the roster, in my opinion. But if you can't make layups as a quarterback at $60 million, Sean, I don't know where you go. And you're not getting out of that contract. It's kind of like a Deshaun Watson, right?
Yeah, you're hampered. There's no doubt, because who's going to take it on? That's the problem, you know, at this stage. At the real coach underscore JB on Twitter, every single Monday at about 12:10, JB joins us. All right, let me get to that Phillip Rivers conversation. I love the fact that he had the balls to get off his couch. That a lot of guys wouldn't want to be risk more. There's more chance at embarrassment than there was at reward, right? But I love his personality of his, you know, his high school kids got to see it, his own kids, and he's got a lot of them. There's an example there. And nobody questions his toughness or competitiveness. But I said last week, and JB, I know you agreed the same way, is this is to keep you in the right play, emotionally, mentally strong, and knows how to handle the line of scrimmage more than anything else. This was nothing to do with physical, because at 44, I guarantee he sore today, no matter how many hits he took. But watching him, if the ball doesn't come out on time, they've got no chance in the passing game unless it's sideways, JB. And even when it does come out on time, it's not the same. But it wasn't the same 5 years ago. So you knew you were getting it. Had him in position to win. I mean, go down there. It wasn't because of him. But you know what? I'd say at times getting the ball out and at least not taking a sack. And he looked a little sluggish in the pocket, but I give him credit. He did give him a chance. Defense couldn't get off the field in the end there, and they get a field goal and get kicked. But while it wasn't pretty, I give him a lot of credit for battling. And I know it was emotional for him. But damn, JB. All you do is got to squeeze and play the line of scrimmage and beg Jonathan Taylor to, you know, not to beat you and line it up and say, you're going to have to throw the ball beyond 10 yards on time or you're going to get hit in the mouth. That's where we're at, even with all the respect I have for Phillip Rivers and the fact that he pushed his Hall of Fame candidacy back 5 more years by coming back. So it took a lot of balls, and I give him a lot of credit for that.
He also got 5 years extended on his insurance.
Yeah.
So that was a genius move. His insurance expired. NFL players get 5 years, for everybody that don't know. It was about to expire. He gets back in it. Now he gets insurance again for his 12, 13, 14 kids or whatever he's got. So unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and JB, I was thinking, man, that's that arm, you know, when you're like haven't thrown for a handful of years. You go out and throw it, and then you're like walk it off the field. And he's never going to throw it. You do it, and you're throwing it. You don't let anybody see it. Like the wincing, but your face, your furrow in your brow, like, damn, that ball ain't coming out like I want to. So it's all going to be about timing for him. But you know what?
And Sean,
he's a tough son of a bitch, though. I give him a lot of credit for that.
Let me ask you this, though. That was adrenaline at his all-time high.
No doubt.
He will not have another game where the adrenaline is this high, where he was just, you could have hit him with a missile and he was going to bounce off that yesterday. But next game going forward, I believe you're going to find out that this is a 44-year-old guy, and they're going to get mollywopped. They have a hell of a schedule ahead of them, and there's just no way that he has success, is there?
The fact that he hung in there against Seattle saying something, but you're right, JB. He's probably a little sore today, but now it becomes the business side of it. Thanks. We're great. Love having you. Kids are excited. Your team's excited. We all listen. I tuned in and had the volume up on all the games I put on. The volume was up on this game at least for a half because I wanted to hear how they were discussing him and to watch what he was doing. And you could see him laboring. But like I said, most guys may not have had the balls to come out because most guys will come out and go to the bench and back up a young guy and mentor him. They threw him right in with less than a week's work and had to do it. Like I said, business starts to kick in now that the excitement and the adrenaline's wore off. Now he's got to go to work, and it's going to be a tough run down stretch. I don't know how the success continues. All right, a couple injuries, comment on these. Mahomes has been pretty damn healthy his whole career, JB. Now with the ACL, he's got to go to work and spend obviously the offseason getting back right. Things just weren't right in Kansas City all the way along, and our best to Patrick Mahomes. So with the injury to Mahomes, start there. And then the Packers situation with obviously a non-football related injury to Micah Parsons. They were flowing around yesterday. Injuries always come into play this late in the season, as does attrition.
Yeah, unfortunately, I believe this, you know me, how I feel about it. I think Andy Reid's done a remarkable job creating an offense that allows this guy to stay upright for as long as he has, especially when, to me, this is kind of like what he's been for a while. I think it's been hidden by a number one defense in football and many, many more weapons than he has right now. And listen, Rashee Rice is their big-time playmaker. Xavier Worthy's their slot mismatch that you thought was going to be a nightmare for defenses. And Kelsey's 40 years old. I mean, he does. He looks it. He looks 40, whatever age he is. He looks old. And I, you know, my one side of me is like, it's been a great run. Andy Reid's one of my favorites of all time. But they've had no running back, I guess, on a team that's so successful to not have a big time name running back and run the football to keep this guy a little bit more upright when you've lost offensive tackles over years and you have no O-line this year is a little alarming to me that they would have allowed it to get this far. Hunt is not a starting running back in the NFL. Pacheco's been over, I guess we thought he was good in two Super Bowls ago and it looked explosive, but we haven't seen that guy since. I don't know why. You drafted a young athletic guy out of LSU that really never panned out. I don't know what happened. Yeah. Hilaire was, we thought, was going to be the guy. I don't know what happened there, but their defense is middle of the pack this year. Their offense is even worse than that. And this is what happens when you can't get the ball out quick to a Tyreek Hill and be lateral, as Andy Reid is, Sean. And now he has to stand in there and try to throw a dagger route or a basic, you know, inside of, outside the backer when he drops into the quarter coverage and I'm throwing it into anticipatory windows. I don't have the time to do that. That's not his game. Never has been his game. And now he's taking unnecessary shots that you are, or shots that you just normally don't see. Plus you see him all year long, Sean. He's been trying to run people over and he's been trying to do all that. And you never seen that before from Mahomes. He's always ad-libbed with his feet, but now he's trying to be physical and that's not this guy's makeup. That's not his DNA. Like, he needs to be getting it out quick. And the gimmick offense that Andy Reid's devised, and that just wasn't it. You could kind of see it. This looks like the Mahomes I said he would look like if he was drafted by the Bears or one of those lower echelon programs years ago. This is who he looks like the last 2 years, by the way. Baker Mayfield's doubled his stats, just FYI, and I'm not even a big Baker guy. So, statistically speaking, he had a couple good runs there. But that's why you got to stop anointing these guys so quickly, Sean. We put our foot in our mouth too often, especially on ESPN, these networks, when we're saying he's the best ever to do it. He didn't even beat the best ever to do it when he was 45 years old. How is he the best to ever do it? And he couldn't even beat the GOAT of GOATs one time.
As you see there, the eerie similarities with Mahomes and Brady both tear their ACL in their ninth NFL season coming off a Super Bowl loss. And both QBs having won three Super Bowls prior to that. Well, if Mahomes is fortunate, and I hope he gets healthy, he has a lot of, if he's fortunate to match Brady, he's got a lot of good football ahead of him after this, if that's the same similarities and he takes care of his body the way Tom Brady did, and good on him and a quick recovery and hope that comes back full and healthy.
Unfortunately, Sean, they're cooked next year too.
Yeah, I was just going to get JB real quick about that. How? Yeah, because this is, even if it was a 9-month injury, that's going to take you into training camp or later than training camp.
Nah, into September. That's November.
Yeah, November. That's what I'm saying.
So you're week 8 of the season. Year,
right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you have like a couple of guys that have come back and played, the key is in these injuries, if you think you're healthy, take 2 more weeks or a month, because we've seen the other one where they're not back healthy and they want to get out there and they're rushed. So you're talking about training camp will go, and they'll be into their season probably a month by the time he's hopefully getting ready to play, unless there's some different recovery from an ACL that we don't know about.
And Sean, Andy Reid's not going to get – he's not going to draft a rookie, and he's not going to get
– at least not in the first round. Right.
No. He might draft the quarterback, no doubt, but not in the first – not to me, the starter next year. He's going to go after – here's a breakdown. Aaron Rodgers, 41 years old. He's, if you could say what you want to say about him this year, he is the MVP of that team this year. He's the best player on the Pittsburgh offense. That's bad. I mean, I'm just going to tell you right now, he has no weapons on offense. They're in 32 personnel and 30 personnel and 22 personnel because they have no weapons. They're all tight end heavy. Their best weapon, the 330-pound tight end, Sean, he's the MVP of the Pittsburgh Steelers, regardless of what you want to say. He's 41. Kirk Cousins threw for 300 yards 2 weeks in a row at 37. Flacco left one place, drove 91 miles, and started at the other place and led the league in passing for his 4 weeks before he gets replaced by Burrow in Cincinnati. He's 30, what, 8, 9? And 37-year-old Matthew Stafford's the best quarterback in the NFL. There is no one else. So guess what? Andy Reid's going to go after maybe Kirk Cousins, Flacco to start the season. I could easily see him going after an older guy that is better than any of these young guys right now.
So you think, JB, how many players away are they from getting back to Super Bowl? I know we're just less than a year removed from a Super Bowl appearance, but it started. They were fortunate. They made plays at the right time. Right now, they're not. Even when Mahomes was there, they haven't been good enough to take advantage of certain opportunities. So let's say Mahomes was healthy and this injury never happened. How many players away are they from getting back to being a dominant team?
5-on-0. Two tackles, probably a guard, a big-time back, and a big-time tight end. They got to have that bare minimum to go along with Rashee Rice and Worthy if those are going to be your two guys. Hollywood Brown is just kind of who he is. He's Hollywood Brown. The Horton kid or Thornton or whatever, he's been their best touchdown receiving guy, and he's a nobody. So, like, this is who it is. They got to go get a young athletic tight end, a Gronk or a young Kelce type. And who that is, there's a lot of them out there now. There's a lot of tight ends coming down the pike that are – there are a lot of Warrens and Bowers now. You got to go find
– I was going to say, that kid plays with the Las Vegas Raiders right now. That's where he plays, yeah.
And Warren at Indy. Like he's no similar. Doubt. Penn State has another one. They got another tight end coming out of college that's similar to those guys. They got to go get that young tight end that can go displace from the line of scrimmage, get vertical, be a matchup nightmare on a backer. Got to bring down a dime back or put a safety on him to create some other things to keep a hat in the box so I don't have to spare a linebacker on this great tight end. I got to now dictate, oh, shit, I got to spin this down and play him in man with a safety. So now I can do other things if that's what Andy Reid used to doing because Kelce demanded that. Kelce don't demand that no more, Sean. There's outside backers carrying Kelce everywhere he wants to go now. So you don't have – so now you're like, oh, shit, I don't even got to worry about it. Like
the
I don't even
worry advantage about it. The in-space advantage Kelce had is no longer there.
And the reason for – when you played the Chiefs, when you had to match him up with the safety is because you needed the hat in the run box to defend Andy Reid's mismatch and misdirection and all the shit he does. Now they're so bad up front, no a lack of run game. You can displace the backer. You can let the backer run with the tight end now and still keep two backers in and just have a six-man box and stop the Chiefs' run game. So yeah, now,
which you shouldn't be able to do, and they do.
Yeah,
it.
So, and I don't know if Chris Jones is the same Chris Jones. He's still great and all that, but he's not the Chris Jones he was 3 years ago. And he didn't even know they missed the playoffs yesterday. He's delusional as well. He's kind of been out of this whole year. It seems like he's always kind of been out of it this year when fighting other players and coaches. I don't know if Chris Jones is all in. So
yeah, you know what?
You need at least 6-on-0, Sean. Probably 4-on-D. You're probably 10 players away to get back to where you were.
And you know what's interesting about Chris Jones? When he wants to turn it on, that's the thing. At 80%, he was better than most guys he played with. Now at 80% and not all in, just kind of he's floundered at times this year where he hadn't been the same dominant player. And not being all in, or at least the feel from our optics he has been all in, has been a major change to that defense. And has made the job harder on the coordinator and the entire defense. All right. I've been doing this a long time. I argue that if Steve Largent was a slot receiver, played inside and outside like he did my rookie year for us in Seattle, that he'd catch 160 balls every year with his precise route running. Not a big physical guy, but when you say running a 10 yard route, it was at 10 to the dime. You know what I'm saying? It was right on. So, and we've seen the Edelmans and we've seen Cooper Kupps. I'm going to tell you, and all the credit Matt Stafford gets and should. He's the MVP of the league, and the Rams are really friggin' good. even when their defense didn't play great yesterday, they found ways to get it done.
Sean, I was there. I was in a suite. Wow. I got to go. I got to be there and watching him on the field, warming up. Amazing. He's different than the rest of them. I'm just telling you.
Oh, there's no
question. Him and Goff are back-to-back, Sean. Him and Goff are back-to-back. You know, you warm up. You got your receiver coach catching it. Goff's throwing this way. Stafford's throwing this way. So I'm literally watching them both on the field. Goff's a top five ball spinner, in my opinion, arm strength-wise and everything. His elongated motion and Stafford's throwing it from here. It's night and day. Stafford makes him look like me out there right now.
Yeah.
That's how different Stafford is.
Yeah, I'm the jerk. Yeah, my rookie year, Largent was near the end of his career back in 86. Yeah, I did play with him, and the finest route runner and hands I ever played with until I ran into Chris Carter and then those two. But my point, you were there and watching Stafford, deservedly so. We don't give him enough credit for being a freak show, and that's what he is with that arm, and it's like a rubber arm. He just keeps on ripping it. I'm not sure. You know, we've had Moss and Rice and all the great ones, and I'm not comparing him to these guys yet. He's still early in his career. But Puka, 0 to 12 yards, and even when he runs that out and up and makes a catch, his ball, and Brady was comparing him, I think it was to Larry Fitzgerald yesterday, because Larry Fitzgerald I've always compared to Chris Carter because their ability to go catch the ball with their hands and great body control. I'm not sure 0 to 12 yards, and this takes a lot for me to say, I've ever seen better at that position.
He doesn't.
In the infancy of his career, I'm not sure there's a better closer when the ball's around than this guy. And that's saying something. And you can do it anywhere. There's something about this cat, you know, and when he replaces Cooper Kupp, you're like, Kupp was a Triple Crown winner 3 or 4 years ago. This dude, on a consistent basis, is the best player at his position in this league.
He might be the best football player in football right now.
He may be.
And Myles Garrett and him, you can argue, are the best football players. I'm just going to be honest. He dropped an out ball yesterday, and I was shocked because this guy never drops a ball like that touches his hands. Like
anywhere in the catch radius. Right.
He don't drop a ball in traffic, Sean. Like, unbelievable. So yesterday's drop on an out route, I'm looking at it right out in the field. I'm like, oh shit, that was the first I've seen him do that. So he got a little lax his hands, looked like he was looking to run it up. So that happens here and there. I get it. But the guy is unbelievable he doesn't drop balls in traffic. And it's like, I don't know if I've seen a guy that is so sure-handed and Stafford knows it. And that just helps you out as a quarterback confidence-wise, right? Like, knowing that I'm in trouble because they went for it on fourth down twice, and I'm like, and he don't even look off nobody, Sean. He just fucking stared him down and just gives it to him on a back shoulder. And he's like, and Nakua's like this. keep away from the corner and give me that shit.
He doesn't allow the ball to gobble him up. He's physical. He's got – it was like Largent was a 4.59, 4.6 guy, 4.62. Yeah. But you never could cover him in space. He just fast at the same speed and pads. And Nakua is the same way. And yes, Isaiah, Sterling Sharp, one of my great friends, and watching him and being in the same division, there is no doubt Sterling Sharp, had he stayed healthy, might have broke the all-time catch record at the time. Yes, and Sterling Sharp catch 175 balls in the slot now to big physical great hands. Yes, he is in that ball control, body control, snatch with his hands, and just better than everybody else. And that is Puka. And it's just a joy to watch he and Stafford work together. And you're right. You don't have to look him off, because no matter where you throw that ball in the catch radius, he's getting to it before the DB is, just because his aggressiveness. It's one thing to be aggressive and have hands of stone. It's another thing to be aggressive and catch it like it's one of those Westin Hotel, you know, heavenly mattresses. It's frightening. And that's how good he is. To Shadur, we don't have to spend much time on this. It looked, after last week's performance, we played good, overwhelmed. And I saw one JB where they brought a guy off the slot. They had a Mike Wright situation, and he just didn't know where the blitz was coming from. And another time on the right, when he did, it was a built-in flat route, and he yanked it in the ground. I see some stuff. He's become the deep ball is pretty – getting hit in the mouth and throwing the deep ball is pretty impressive. But – was overwhelmed yesterday, and I know it's cold and the rest of it, but with the good, there comes the bad. Yesterday, he looked like a rookie quarterback that going to need a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't know if he's ready, Sean. I've been saying that.
Well, he's not. He's just surviving it on a bad offensive team, no doubt.
Yeah, and this is who I said he would be when he played a real defense. Listen, you can say the NFLs all have real defenses. They all have real players. I get all that. But the Titans and the Raiders are the two of the worst football programs in football right now. There's no, you can't tell me that those are the same equal. And the 49ers defense that he played, where he also lost, but he played, 9 of 11 starters aren't on that team right now. So don't tell me that's the same Niner defense that you would have normally faced. A 44-year-old just went into Seattle, a better defense than the Bears, and was highly, at least efficient. Didn't put no numbers up, but efficient. I couldn't imagine Shador against the Seattle defense. If he was that bad against the Chicago defense, that's pretty good. This is who he would be, in my opinion. He throws great deep ball. He throws a great post route. He throws some great balls on the deep side of things, which I said last year I thought he was the best deep thrower in college football. But you can tell he does not have a clue what's going on. And the people out there that, because I go at him hard because I just think that's who he is. I think you're a Deion Sanders fan, and that automatically makes you a Shador Sanders fan. And when you hear the truth about him, you get mad and upset at me. The bottom line is, well, he didn't get an offseason coach. So did Shook get an offseason?
He's playing good football right now on a worse team. Yeah.
I'm being honest, man. It blows my mind, the defense. The prime sexuals, I call them, are unbelievable. I don't think the guy's that good. I think he's a fifth-round draft pick. I don't believe there's any collusion involved. I think that's who he is. But I also want to see him play every game the rest of this year so everybody can make their evaluation and say, all right, we've seen enough, or he's the guy going forward. Don't play no one else. Keep playing him. So we can all find out and give him this fair shot, since everybody gets a trophy now and everybody has to play. This is ridiculous, Sean. It's like Joe Burrow crying. Eric Weddle ripped his ass today, too. Like, this is ridiculous. Where are we at? What's going on with quarterbacks, Sean? Last time I checked, there is no job description in the quarterback manual that allows for this, that allows for excuses, that allows for all the shit we're seeing by the quarterback. I've never seen it in my life. I've never seen it in a quarterback manual. Have you seen it in your job description? Was it ever in your job description?
It's like the baseball world. It's the unwritten rule. That's exactly what you don't do. I confess it's somebody else's. And it's shocking from him, because I think we all looked at it different, that his toughness and his ability to deal with all the shit is what's been a part of, aside from the fact he's great in the pocket.
And you told them, you told that place, sign Higgins, sign Chase, give them $300 million. Let's get $300 million tied up in three guys. You bitch and moan about that. Now you want to go? You want to cry? It's ridiculous. I'm glad Eric Weddle went off. He was like, JB, there's no way I could have played for the guy in the locker room if I heard that.
Yeah, well, I think Weddle probably would have approached him on his own.
And he said, this right here could be fine. We've seen scenarios where everyone has their own, you know, they get into their own mold and they want to stay away. But it should have never been on camera. It should have been in that locker room. And then Weddle and these other guys could have consulted him and said, hey, man, you good? What's up? This didn't need to be on record.
Yeah, this would have been that's not like you, my man. We'll get this. You're Joe Burrow, dude. Yeah. This is how you're supposed to approach it.
Don't compare
the guys out in front of this. Right.
Don't compare Sean Salisbury and JB out buying fucking eggs and can't afford gas in the street to get their car, to get their family to the grocery store. Don't compare them to your issues. You kidding me? You $70 million a year. It's a slight and slap in the fan base, that Cincinnati, the normal person out there. You're a one percenter. Rightfully so. You've earned the right. God's touched you to be this gifted. But damn, don't sit here and compare your down year to a guy that can't afford groceries. Stop.
Yeah.
It's no a bad look, Sean. Bad look.
And there's going to be two of those teams in Ohio, the Cleveland Browns and the Cincinnati Bengals, may very well be looking for new head coaches as well when the evaluation part starts. Let's end with this, JB. I'm going to give you a chance every week if it keeps happening. Caleb Williams made a few throws. Now, he's another one that unfortunately still misses the simple throw. Oh, yeah. That the elementary, the throw you just got to make, the boring play. But I can tell you, the throw he made in the back of the end zone going to his right, and some of the throws he fits in windows. And in truth, I know people don't know this, but in his first, what was it, 100 or however many passes he's thrown, he and one other player, he's like the NFL all-time leader in minimal interceptions going into this game yesterday. So he's protecting the ball. Now, there's some that may have been caught that should have been caught or weren't. But, JB, are you ready to elevate him in your game? He's doing some spectacular stuff, and they're playing some pretty damn good football. Do you think better of him than you did a year ago or 6 weeks ago with Caleb Williams? I'm not saying you should or shouldn't, but you've been a great, harsh, but fair critic of him. Is there another level for you? Not many guys are going to make this throw. Not many guys are going to have the balls to attempt this throw, and there's only a handful. Stafford's one of them. Josh Allen made a throw like this yesterday. Are you ready to elevate him yet in your thought process, JB? Is he closer?
No.
Why?
I think Ben Johnson should be a coach of the year candidate, obviously, with a few other guys. That could be a discussion on its own. I think he's done an Andy Reid style of offensive creation that with Mahomes, as he has done with Caleb Williams. They have one of the best O-lines of football, the best run games in all of football, two guys that are dynamic. Nobody knew the other guy was. Swift was the guy, but now this other backup kid has been lights out. You have weapons all across the field. This is a team that Justin Fields wished he could have had. And their defense is legitimate top five. Like, this is a legitimate team Ben Johnson's built and put together in basically an offseason. And look at Detroit's offensive woes without Ben Johnson. It's clear. This guy matters. So to discuss Caleb Williams, in my opinion, I think that he is benefiting from all of that, but he still is not a guy. This reminds me of Detroit's team last year. I think there'll be a great regular season. There'll be a first round knockout, though. They'll get beat first round because when the lights get brightest, he can't perform at the level you need him to. Period. That's my gut. That's where it is. So that's where I am. I'm not a fan. I don't believe. I just listen. The one thing is the fingernail painting. We get it. Take that apart and my bias away. He makes great. He's a freak. In my opinion, he is one of the niftiest with his feet I've seen in a while in the pocket. He's got eyes in the back of the head, things you can't teach. You and I know how that is. You feel it, you get out of there. But then he just can't make a layup. Like, just the shit you can't do. Now, if you want to take the next level, you can't miss layups. And
well, that's making a great defensive play on the other end of basketball and going and missing the dunk at the other end is what you're talking about when it's an uncontested dunk at the other end. That's the next level to his game, JB. You are, and if he does get that down, regardless of how we all think if he's beats to a different drum, I don't care. If he gets that down, there'll be another level. And that'll be the challenge for Ben Johnson this offseason to take him to another level. And in truth, in defense of Caleb Williams, which I'm not defending him because I've been as hard critical on him as well, is getting able to settle in 2 or 3 or 4 years in a row with the same coach will make a difference for him. JB, great stuff, brother. It's always great to have you on, my man, and what a treat for us. We went from late last week to early this week in our normal appearance on Monday, and good to talk to you, brother. And you can find him at @TheRealCoach_JB in his show every single day, Monday through Friday. Great passion, great guests, and my main man. So I appreciate
always, you, brother. Appreciate you, brother.
All right. You always, man. Thank you. That's JB. Let's get Segs back in here. And, you know, real quick, Segs, with this Caleb Williams stuff, he's doing stuff. Put it this way, I firmly believe, and I'm not just referring to JB. JB admitted, you know, the fingernail painting and the way he kind of goes about his leadership and carries a purse and all that. In truth, if you're able to compartmentalize and that stuff doesn't bother you, whether you're new school, old school, or anywhere in between, you cannot deny the talent of this football player. He is extremely gifted, great feet, as JB said. Off schedule, he's sick. On schedule, he's starting to really do stuff where he's not escaping after the first read. He's hanging a little longer and then escaping. He's using his legs as a check down when necessary as opposed to as a crutch, which is important. The next level to his game, if I was coaching him, and Ben Johnson's smarter than I am, the technique of, dude, you can't – I think a lot of times when guys are this gifted, Segs, what happens is they take for granted the simple stuff. It's like think a quarterback dropping back. He's a right-hander. The easy way, as we call it, is when you drop back, you're a right-hander, seeing everything in your face, you don't mechanically have to do much because you're throwing to your front side. Let's say you're throwing a curl flat and you miss the flat to your front side. I'm just telling you, what happens to us, and as a right-handed thrower, the easier the play, the more we relax. It's like a check down. Why sometimes you'll see a 5 yard check down. It hits off the guy's hands and ends up in somebody's hands. Why? Because we get too casual. Not relaxed. Relax is good. We get too casual. oh, that's an easy throw. So what do? Got to drop out of slot, take it. It's a 5-yard check down. Ends up as a bad throw. You saw it a couple times yesterday for people, not just him, where they'll miss one guy's in sitting in zone. He'll throw it to the wrong shoulder guy. The easy, boring stuff. If he can ever get to the point where in his mind he convinces himself, and I'll end this part of this on one thing I do when I train quarterbacks. I've had some over the years that are so physically gifted, and when they're in high school, they're so dominant over the other guys that they can get by that way, Segs. They don't really have to settle in mechanically, decisions. Oh, there's a check. Oh, I'll just use my legs and run by that guy. I can be late throwing the ball, so I can be a window late because, well, my arm's strong and everybody else, I'll fit it in there. And I've gotten to the point where I train hard with guys that are so physically gifted. If you got great feet, I train you like you don't. Meaning, sit in that pocket. We're not going to be. You sit in there. We're going to learn how to manipulate this because I know what your crutch is. I try to train them away from their crutch.
Yeah.
I want them to use their crutch as reactionary when they need it, not as a crutch before we get through all the great decisions we need to make to throw the ball to the open guy. And I train the strong-armed rifle. I have a kid who's, dude, he can throw it through a car wash without getting it wet. And he can hit the car wash down the field. At times, he'll miss the car wash because, well, he takes the too casual.
Yeah.
On the easy ones because he's so gifted. So I train him if he's got a pop gun arm. So what does that mean? Throw on time. Get your feet underneath you. Throw the ball. Accuracy is at a premium. So if you're late with a pop gun arm, you're dead. Phillip Rivers. No disrespect, tough, but Phillip Rivers. So when you try to coach, I try to coach them out of the crutch, meaning the crutch within your reads you don't want. The crutch becomes what we do when all hell breaks loose and I'm going to go try to make me a damn play about 6 to 8 times a game. That's when go lean on it, man. Be a football player. Just go do it. Be an athlete. But the other times, those are the ones that are going to separate 3rd and 4, miss a 5-down check down in the playoffs. They get the ball back. They go down, score. You lose by 9 because you had a chance to close it to a field. You get my point, Seg. Mm-hmm. So to me, I train them. And if Ben Johnson can somehow convince Caleb Williams to coach him out of his crutch early in the reads, and on the easy stuff, Caleb Williams will be fantastic at the next level. The stuff that he can fix is the easy stuff. The other stuff you can't coach him on. You ain't coaching a guy to make that throw that he made. That's just pure, first of all, balls. Second of all, to have the velocity and the wherewithal to fit it in a window and throw it. And he did. So once he gets the simple stuff down, it'll be a new level for Caleb Williams. And I firmly believe that because he's and some continuity with his team and a coordinator slash head coach, which he hasn't had in his career.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Johnson has done wonders for Caleb Williams. And you can see it clicking. Like, yeah, two games ago against Philly, he wasn't that great, wasn't that accurate. Then he came back against the Packers and was pretty good accuracy-wise. And then yesterday I thought was arguably maybe his best game of his career in terms of just the way he was throwing the ball. And it was 7 degrees at kickoff. It felt like it was negative 15, and it didn't bother him one bit throwing the football. I mean, the Bears, I think he was 17 of 28. The Bears had 5 drops. I mean, balls that hit them square in the hands, and they dropped. And
no Rome either, right?
Yeah, no Rome again. Yeah. He threw the ball away, I think it was 2 or 3 times. So now you're talking about really just 2 or 3 passes that were, you know, incomplete. And
those are sometimes the best plays of the game. Throw it away. It's okay. Yes. Live to play another down. You can't make – that's – and coach, he's starting to get better at the hero stuff. And in the process, he's becoming a bigger hero.
And the stat you were mentioning to JB was in any quarterback in NFL history. So all you guys that have played quarterback that have 1,000 throws.
1,000. There you go.
Yes. He has 12 interceptions. That is the least amount of all time. I think it was Teddy Bridgewater had 14. He's the next closest. So, I mean, he's protecting the ball. Yeah. And yesterday, and if you're a Bears fan like me, maybe you kind of look at Matt Eberflus and kind of say thank you. I know the rookie season was horrible. He got sacked almost 70 times and all that. But they preach so much protect the ball, protect the ball, protect the ball, that maybe that's still in the back of his head. But Ben Johnson is allowing him, and he's still learning how to kind of just unleash it a little bit more. And we see it time and time again. He only had one throw yesterday that the ball was in harm's way. And it was a ball that Myles Garrett pushed the offensive lineman straight into him, and he just got it over the defender's hands, and it was incomplete. So, yeah, I thought yesterday, I know the Browns aren't good, but the one thing they do have is a good defense, and they have Myles Garrett. Yeah. And they had a great game plan for Myles Garrett. He got a sack and a half, but even the sack he got, the main one, was Caleb just holding the ball in the red zone, not turning it over to set themselves up to hopefully go up 17-0, even though Kyron Sanders missed.
And that's a tribute to Myles Garrett. Even when they're not playing well, he's getting blocked. Yeah. He still gets a sack and a half. And when we say that, see, and there's another part of the discernment. People say, don't take a sack in the red zone. Well, sometimes you're in position that if you try to do something and throw it out of bounds and you can't get your – how many times we've seen guys throw it, doesn't get there, and it gets picked because they can't get it out of bounds. That you're in that 25-yard line range and you take a sack back to the 30, then you're not bothered. Now, if it was a torrential downpour, you couldn't see with fog, I get it. But that's the best – okay, I'm going to secure the ball. Okay, we're back at the 30. It's now 48-yard
field. And you were up 14-0 at the time.
Right. So that's exact – preserve more points. Ball in harm's
way.
He's starting to get it, and it's starting to kick in, and that's going to serve him and Ben Johnson and this team well moving forward.
And the other scary thing about the Bears, last thing, is the fact that probably their two best weapons over the last 3 weeks have been rookie Luther Burden, who they took in the second round, and Colson Loveland, who they took in the first round, the tight end. So, I mean, as these rookies who continue to get better, it's going to be scary, especially with that offensive line that is just, I mean, like Coach JB said, I mean, they are arguably the best offensive line in football. And yeah, Justin Fields, Mitch Trubisky, they would have killed to have this offensive line, but credit to Ryan Poles for going out and putting it together in one offseason.
But neither one of those guys, I don't care if they had the Dallas Cowboys of the 90s offensive line, neither one of those guys is making the plays Caleb Williams makes. He's a better player, period.
Yeah. Let's switch over to college. We're going to go rapid fire here, just hit some topics, and then we'll move on, maybe wrap up the show with a little more NFL talk. Fernando Mendoza wins the Heisman Saturday night. When you look at stats and everything, and I know stats don't tell the whole story, but it was an underwhelming Heisman year when you look at some of the years past and what we've seen.
No doubt.
Guys that didn't even make it to New York that, you know, I mean, you could argue, I think I saw it was Shadur. His stats last year compared to Mendoza's this year. Now, I know Shadur lost a bunch of games, but just stats-wise, Shadur was arguably better than Mendoza stat-wise. So, I mean, you just look at it was a down year, but Mendoza gets it done. He leads Indiana, who, you know, we all say Indiana in football. That's not right. They're undefeated, the number one team in the playoff, and him and Kurt Cignetti are the reasons why. So I get why he won the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, and it turned out, Segs, the four, it got it right. You know, we said that San would be fourth, and I had San and Love third, and Diego second, and Mendoza first. I didn't really think it was going to be much in question. Diego was the guy in his impact, and I know he was frustrated with it. But listen, of the first five guys that were in this race, five, six guys, not one of them, but Love, who finished third, was on your high up on your preseason watch list. Now, Diego, and they thought he could make strides, but it was Arch. It was Klubnik. It was Lenora Sellers. It was DJ Lagway. The list goes on and on. It was Love. It was not. Matter of fact, I'm telling you now, the majority of people that watched college football outside of maybe the Midwest or Indiana that knew through recruiting had no idea what kind of player or who Fernando Mendoza was when this season started. And his signature moment was again Penn State on the road, have to bring him because they would not be the number one seed right now if that wasn't the case. Yep. And while the stats aren't gaudy, and you're right, it was a down year. And I think part of the down year, Segs, is we're caught up in gaudy numbers, not other things that matter.
Right.
Like Diego's, what he did for Vanderbilt, what Mendoza did with a one-year starter in Indiana and to have them. This ain't basketball Assembly Hall, Bobby Knights, Quinn Buckner, and that group, and Kent Benson back in the 70s, okay? Or Keith Smart knocking down a shot. This is Indiana football, and the best name coming out of Indiana over the last 20 years, Larry Johnson, the running back. I was at Indiana when Larry Johnson pounded Indiana in the run game when he was at Penn State, and I'm thinking, this is the team I'm covering in Bloomington, and Larry's running up and down the field as a Heisman, you know, candidate. I'm thinking, will this team ever get to a point where they have household names? And they've been through the Cam Cameron when they were winning some and lose some. And Randall L., when he was a Heisman Trophy candidate. But this team's a team and this guy's at the forefront of it making big decisions and great throws. So while it wasn't gaudy numbers and it's not the names, Segs, we were used to, that's another reason why we're like, right, was this Heisman? But in truth, it wasn't, because there was never a guy, even when we sat there, there were still some and it was pretty close, that held out hope that Diego was going to win, including himself and not Mendoza. So they took into case into their decision making, it seems, a lot of these of impact on team, what they did, and both the top two guys, I don't know, has it ever happened where a Vanderbilt and Indiana guy were 1-2, or 2-1, should I say, with Mendoza 1 and no. Diego 2 in the history of this sport?
No.
For two teams, the impact those two cats had on their programs, and one's playing in a bowl game, would have loved to be in the playoff and would have won to win the Heisman, got second. The other one's got his team at a one seed, Heisman Trophy winner, going to be the first pick of the draft, more than likely. Yeah. But it's Vanderbilt and Indiana. That's another reason why people may not like it, is because it's not Southern Cal and Notre Dame, or it's not, you know, it's not Alabama and Georgia. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Yeah.
Diego Pavia, you mentioned him. He finishes second. He was the darling. He was, you know, everybody loved him. Look, you know, the mom funny with Theo Von and all that stuff. His brothers. Then they walk in looking like they're, you know, Italian gangsters walking in with their chains and their suits and everything, walking in together. First of all, Diego Pavia, I don't know that he's 5'8". That dude is tiny. They list him at 6 foot. He is further from 6 foot than a lot of
people. And I'm 7'2", okay? But, he ain't 6 foot, which is more tribute to him, how good he is.
Yeah. He's finishes second. Then he goes on to say, quote, fuck all the voters. Even the guys who voted for him. And like you said, it was pretty close. But he said,
was in 300 votes or something, say 1713 yeah. or 1700 or 13, something like that.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
And then he goes out.
Oh, partying. There it is. I take that back. It was, maybe that was some first place votes. 23 to 14. So 900 votes if it was the first place votes. Right.
Yeah. Then he goes out partying at a club in New York City, and he buys one of those signs you get with a bottle service. And what's the sign read? Fuck Indiana. And then he's flipping it off. I mean, you talk about a guy going from a fan, a media darling, to just hated in a span of, I don't know, 6 hours. It's this guy.
You know what that's called? You know what that's called?
What's that?
I don't know. Does he drink, Mendoza? Mendoza, but does Diego drink?
Well, I get, yes.
I never want to put it on him, but I could tell you this. It feels like a post, Instagram post, flip your, if you start to think soberly while you're doing that, there's nothing that tells you I walked off that stage and with all that, and I'm going to turn, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like, how many of us have said, let me grab Twitter after you've had a cigar and a couple shots, mm-hmm. like when somebody on, when your team screws up, you want to go hammer them, right?
Yeah.
Well, it feels to me like this was, uh-oh, and then he wakes up and apologizes, as he did. And I understand the emotion of not winning, but this is, it's silly. It's probably going to remind people, and I don't mean this because he's worked, Johnny Manziel went through some of this when he got to, you know what I'm saying? It was spectacular, but he won it, so I understand it, but you know, you had a bunch of people that would have liked to see Diego win it. So this feels like a in-the-moment reaction, emotions let fly, and I don't know if there's booze or just flipping them off that made it like the people are going to love this. But then you wake up the next morning or some of your buddies tap you and say, dude, this ain't it. Yeah, this was wrong for a guy that is beloved and people are rooting for, and I'm sure they're still going to root for him. But this is one where you're exactly right. You went from, wow, just like DJ Lagway in a different way, he's going to go through in Florida after he left there and another thing, college football. But I feel bad that the voters, that you know, for Vanderbilt, after the great representative he's been, and people will get over it, but that 15 minutes of stupidity, probably he'll regret, I'm sure, and probably going through that today.
Well, and I'll just tell you right now, I mean, he can't go back to college because this was his graduate year. We're not going to hear from Diego Pavia again, unless it's something like a Johnny
Manziel
career, like trying to figure shit out, you know, maybe gets caught partying, maybe makes it to the USFL or whatever, and is playing some decent football, but no one's really going to care. It was a great
maybe
story.
Maybe it was his going away celebration party, Segs. He doesn't, like what the hell matters now, but it's still,
going
still,
out.
He could have said, I'm frustrated. I didn't win. I want to win. Yeah. I'm not telling him what to say, but, you know,
he did apologize and wrote a big long article basically on Twitter, but I don't care. Like, you showed who you were right there, and that's the way it goes.
Did the other two guys do that?
No.
They lost in the top four that were there? Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah. I listen, this, I love everything about the kid, the way he plays, his energy, all of it. This, you didn't need to do this because the the apology took five paragraphs more than that. Because you know it was going to offend somebody. You don't have to worry about offending people if you're doing the right thing. But listen, some argue. I don't have a problem that Mendoza won the Heisman. He was the guy that I thought should have. Yep. Best player on the number one team. He should have won. And Diego made a huge impact. But this ain't it. And maybe some of the people that were going to endorse him may, you know, going forward. Because this is a guy that will still get endorsements even if he's not playing in the league. You know, for a minute at least. The 15 minutes will be extended. So whether he makes a team or what have you, this was a great story that didn't need to end this way for him college-wise. Well, he's got one more game, should I say, Sage.
Yeah,
he's got
one more game.
His bowl game.
DJ Lagway, you mentioned him. He says he will transfer from Florida. I've already saw early favorites are Miami, LSU, and Baylor. I threw in our group text that, you know, watch out for Indiana because Cignetti's looking for that next transfer. I think that's how he's going to continue to roll, try to find that next guy that's sitting out there.
What about Clemson, Sags? What about Clemson and
Clemson makes sense. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely an option. So he'll have his options. Nebraska's Dylan Raiola just announced during the show that he will enter the transfer portal. And the best tweet I saw yesterday was a picture of Dylan Raiola like crying because now he has to tear his ACL to continue his story of being like Patrick Mahomes.
Let's hope not. Okay.
He's going to tear his own ACL so he can continue the Patrick Mahomes lookalike.
Well, story. Tell him to urinate a few drops in a league for 8 years and win or 9 years and win some championships. Then he can take the Mahomes. Well,
he don't care about
route.
The winning part.
And you know what's true? Raiola and Lagway. Neither one of them, and listen, Lagway's not far from me in the Woodlands. I coached him at a high school camp, and when I coached him, it was like his junior year. You knew he was different, and he's a phenomenal kid. And I don't begrudge any of them for going, but Raiola and Lagway, neither one of them had the years they expected to have this year.
Yeah.
And neither did either one of their teams. So we'll see where it goes. There'll be people standing in line, though, and I can tell you this, Siggs, whether it's Clemson or LSU or a few of those, you're talking Indiana, those two cats are going to go somewhere that can heighten those numbers, put them in Heisman Trophy range, and get them paid. And those teams you mentioned are going to be right in the fray. And Miami did well with Cam Ward. They did well with, you know, Carson Beck. Pretty good. They paid him. Somebody's probably standing in that line of those two as well, as you mentioned.
I mean, it sucks for Florida to lose DJ Lagway because he's such a talented player. But if he goes to LSU, Lane Kiffin takes him after – being one of the finalists for Lane Kiffin. I mean, that's
brutal. Well, the Florida fan base is, I read mixed review, you know, some, hey man, good luck. You've been nothing but, and he has handled his, been a Christian, God fearing, faith based, good kid who's talented, but it was up and down things. And you almost wondered if that was going to happen when the coaching change happened. Oh, wouldn't it be great for college football to have him show up at LSU? Now, Florida fans, even the ones that support him, are going to shift that narrative, brother, because those are fighting words, no doubt about it.
Kenny Dillingham spoke about the Michigan job, and we have the video we'll show in just a second, but he came out and you know, gave his thoughts. Kalen DeBoer came out and kind of affirmed his commitment to Arizona State. So let's listen to Kenny Dillingham and what he had to say on the Michigan job.
I mean, I think that's cool. I guess. I mean, that's one of the best programs in the country. It's one of the most, it's one of the best logos in the country. I think everybody can agree there. In today's era, I think it's one of the best jobs in the country. And I think everybody can attest to that. That doesn't change how I feel about here. That doesn't change that my sister's my neighbor. That doesn't change that my parents live three doors down. That doesn't change that my son's best friend is my sister's daughter. So none of that changes, but it is one of the best jobs in America. It's an unbelievable brand, iconic brand. And it's a great opportunity for somebody.
Now, he did also say that he has not talked to anybody from Michigan, but he wouldn't say his agent
whether his agent
or representative has talked to Michigan. I don't know. Watching that video, listening to the way he's talking, I mean,
I feel like he's talking
a little both ways here.
He's setting it up.
He's still saying, I love Arizona State. I love being near my family. It's my alma mater, but, you know, Michigan's maybe the best job.
Kenny Dillingham, for being somebody awful young, knows how to play both sides. Oh, and Mikey, thank you, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate the compliment. And you being a fan and of the show as well. Here's what it is. First off, Kenny, I love you, but I wouldn't keep my family too close. He's got family. It's like this kid and best friends and mom and dad and the rest of it. I mean, that's awesome. But every now and then you might need a little breathing room. So I get it. And Arizona is a good place to do it. So, and I mean that obviously with a little affection. Did you hear what he said? At no time did he fully deny it. Mm-hmm. At no time did he say, no, I have no interest. I have no idea. He made sure to compliment Michigan through and through, just in case, to mention one of the best jobs in the country, logos in the country. Always got it. I mean, great place. Of course. And then to say, yeah, but man, I've got a great gig, all that. I got this gig here, and I don't want to say something too out of line that has them say he's not in. But he also doesn't want to say something about Michigan that says, oh, he's not one of us. We can't go after him.
Right.
As we know, and it's been out and announced, this is something that we've been discussing kind of softly, but he's at Washington. He turned Arizona around. Jed Fish's opportunity at Michigan may rear its head as well. He was there when Jim Harbaugh was there. He was a part of Jim's program. And so Jed is a good football coach and a good football man, and maybe he'll be in it. And that'd be kind of something that I'm sure Michigan would love, because everywhere he's gone, they do good stuff. But the Dillingham thing, that's called understanding the PR platform.
Yeah. And Josh Pate from ESPN, who's as connected as anybody when it comes to college football, especially over the last couple of years, he's still pushing the Kenny Dillingham to Michigan stuff pretty hard, even as of this morning. I mentioned that Caleb DeBoer affirmed his commitment to Alabama. Okay. He's still being mentioned when it comes to the Michigan job. Now, you know, what does that say? We'll see. But another name kind of has been thrown in the mix. Kyle Whittingham says he's done, basically leaves his job at Utah, puts out there, you know, at first it was I'm retiring, or he's retiring by reports. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's that little turn that says, well, no, I'll still coach. There's still coaching to do if I find the right fit. And, you know, I've seen some people mention that Whittingham is interested in this Michigan job. So
I've never heard one person, I've never heard him one time say throughout this, and I've known Kyle, like I told you, he was my host at BYU. And when I went on my recruiting trip, I love him. And he never, no scan, nothing. He just has done it right the whole time. He really has. And I almost think that at times he's probably maximized where Utah was going. I mean, I think he understands that there, I don't want to say there's a ceiling, but you're not going to be like Alabama where you're 3 and 4 years, you're right in the national title game. I mean, you're just a little more limited recruiting wise, but he did a hell of a job. And so I went through it and all the reports, so he's retiring. I think we just assume because he's walking away from a job that he's a lifer, if he wants to keep that job forever. But you start to wonder, were they thinking about a different direction? And was he like, you know what, I get it, but I'm not done coaching. I don't think he is either. And if I'm Michigan, I'm calling him immediately, because you're looking for a guy, Segs, you can't find anybody that's got any baggage. You just can't if you're Michigan. You can't, recent baggage especially, you just can't. And Kyle Whittingham's only baggage is he doesn't have a national championship ring. He doesn't have the national championship ring as a coach. But he's been the same place 30 plus years as a head coach and an assistant. Mm-hmm. He played at BYU, not far away from Salt Lake City in the University of Utah. He's a fixture in the community. He's beloved. And he's got, there's family. There's everything he's done has been done right. I would be very, and it comes from a football family. His old man recruited me when he was there. And his dad was a linebacker coach with the Rams. And for a lot of places. So this is, Whittingham's been doing this since he was 8. He gets it. If you're Michigan, you can do a lot worse than find a guy. I promise you, if he brings him in and you like that physical nature, isn't that what Utah's been? Mm-hmm. They're about as close as programs go when it comes to the way they approach their football. Right. Get under center, get in the gun, talented, but guys that want to play there, that there's loyalty there, that the physicality, that when you describe them, it's run the football and knock you in the mouth. When you describe Utah, same thing. And so, yeah, I wouldn't, that doesn't surprise me one bit. And I would imagine to talk him out of not coaching or to talk him back into coaching if he still wanted to do it, there's worse places for Kyle Whittingham to go to, because that's a quick fix in Michigan with the way they get players.
Yeah, 100%. Before we get to our bet of the day, your guess as of right now, who do you think is the next coach at Michigan? Is it one of the three guys we've talked about?
Yes,
Jeff Fish, Kenny Dillingham, and Kyle Whittingham.
I think you get the mix of not old, but experienced and been there in Jed Fish, and has helped programs and did an amazing job, like I said, at University of Arizona. He's doing a fine job at Washington. And then there's a Kenny Dillingham who had his team last year at Arizona State. He took over. There was a lot of problems going on. Had that team it had him in a playoff. The thing with Dillingham is, too, for him, he's losing his starting quarterback. Now, I don't know how good the guy is behind him, but maybe that's I'm losing my quarterback. I'm going to go maybe where he goes, or where I go, he comes, and Michigan wouldn't be a bad spot. And then I don't think it's going to be DeBoer. I think he's going to have another year at Alabama, just my opinion. And then there's the safest pick. The very safest one is Kyle Whittingham. Mm-hmm. If you go out safe, not under contract now, leaves with no baggage from there if he was. Yeah, they would still hold him in the highest regard. Utah may be ready for a change after all those years. Maybe it's time for and maybe Kyle saw that coming in the next couple of years, decided. So he's the safest one, and they will win. All of these guys are quality coaches, but Kyle Whittingham's never had a top recruiting class and been at a school that was privy to five-star recruits, that they were in position. Mm-hmm. At Michigan, he would be. I'm anxious to see what he can do with Dominic. Now, he's had great players, but he also developed them into great players. Michigan could use that. He's the safest. Dillingham's intriguing. Jed Fish seems like the most logical. So take one for whatever you want. One's young, one's in between, and one's been doing it forever at the same place. So if you like loyalty, Kyle Whittingham's your guy. I think you can win with all three. I don't think Kalen DeBoer's leaving. If I'm Kalen, even though you like Michigan, the challenge to go continue to get better at Alabama would be on the table for me. And you're in the playoff, so go do your thing and you won't have to worry about it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see who Michigan hires, and we'll continually follow that until a hire is made. All right, Sean, let's do our bet of the day first. Dolphins at Steelers, Monday Night Football. Big game for both teams as Miami continues to try to win games that probably they shouldn't win like they have been. They're at Pittsburgh. It's going to be cold. Miami doesn't win in the cold. Steelers -3, so they're basically just telling you it's a pick 'em between these two teams. We know T.J. Watt won't play due to the lung issue that we discussed at the end of last week, and the over-under set at 42.5. So which way do you look for this game?
I think it could exist in the under part, but my bet is Pittsburgh. I am going to go with what my eyes have told me. Yes, Miami's playing better football. Yes, 2025 isn't 2024 or 2023. Yes, they have hope. Bottom line is, though, until they prove to me they can go in an inclement weather, cold, balls cold, and you can handle some physical, even though Pittsburgh may not be the same physical team they've been in the past, they're more physical than Miami. This is a great chance for Miami to prove not only to us but to themselves that they can go do this. I don't trust it. And I think Pittsburgh also, looking at the landscape of their division, and it's important for Miami too, but Pittsburgh to go win the division, landscape's important. I like Pittsburgh in the game and by more than a field goal. I'll take the Steelers at the -3, and I'll give those points. I don't trust Miami in the middle of December. They got to prove it to me. If this was at home, I would be telling you a different – I think I'd give you a different story. Yeah. I may not even touch it. I feel that Pittsburgh wins this game. I don't think Miami can handle the cold weather. And until they prove to me they can, I'm against it.
There's just something.
I don't love either team.
There's just something in me telling me to pick Miami, take the points, and I think it could just be a wash. It could just be Pittsburgh wins by 3, and there's no, just, you know.
Maybe 17-13, 17-14, 20-17 type game.
Give me the under for sure, and I'll take a flyer on Miami. We actually did pretty good at
the Pittsburgh Steelers
on Friday. You went 4-2 in your picks, and I went 6-3, just adding a few more over unders. So, I mean, we both did good. And if you bet with us, you did really well.
How did I go? Because you picked both. Is that how you go?
Yeah, there's some games where you just took the team and didn't like the number.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, that's just kind of.
Tag a bowl. Regardless, that's 10 wins, and that's good money. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. So, tomorrow, when we come back at 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, we're going to talk more NFL. How big is the Micah Parsons ACL injury? What does that do to Green Bay? Green Bay loses to Denver. Denver, arguably yesterday, looked like they could be the best team in the NFL with the way Bo Nix played. And if you followed me for any time during his time at Auburn and Oregon, I do not like Bo Nix. I don't think he's a very good quarterback. Yesterday, he was awesome. He was outstanding against that Green Bay defense. And I did not think that score would be that much over the number that they put out, and they were scoring almost at will with those two teams.
I was shocked of all the shocking things. That was maybe the, aside from the injuries, the biggest was in that game that points were had.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Jordan Love, couple tough interceptions thrown, that hurt the Packers in the end. But the big story is Micah Parsons injury that takes him out for the foreseeable future, you know, just like, Patrick Mahomes tearing his ACL. We talked, JB said, you know, November of next year, he thinks is when Mahomes returns. It's not too much further behind for Micah Parsons. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Rams again, how they just, I mean, they're so good.
I do want to talk about New England, Buffalo. We needed longer on that.
100%.
The second half, the way Buffalo does their thing, dude, is crazy. But do not quit on New England. They were impressive. No. It just, right. Josh Allen, I saw some throws from quarterbacks yesterday. Now, I've seen some bad ones. I saw some good ones. He made plenty of them. Drake May is going to be a player in this frigging league. He already is. He saw two of the best along with Stafford yesterday. And getting back to Bo Nix, and I'll end on this, Sakes, on your final tees. In the third quarter with about 9 minutes to go, he made two throws, one down the sideline, and then the touchdown throw that were, well, kind of like the Josh Allen touchdown he threw and the Caleb Williams to the back of the end zone.
They were big
time
throws.
He made a couple throws. Damn right they were. If this guy develops, the Denver, if he plays his best football in January, I would be very leery of that team. Because you still look at him, I know you still tread lightly, but man, they're pretty friggin' good. And Sean Payton isn't afraid to do a lot of good stuff offensively. I was impressed with Denver's offense yesterday.
We'll talk about it, but that play call of the T formation, handing it to a fullback. I don't know what Sean Payton was doing with that one, but.
He's got some getting too cute like Dan Campbell. And Dan Campbell and him, they know each other as well.
Yeah.
So don't kid yourself. He shows confidence in his players, man. He does regularly.
So we'll talk about all that more in depth tomorrow. We'll just look at the playoff standings, how they sit now, what could happen in these final 3 weeks, as some teams in the playoffs have really tough schedules and teams outside of the playoffs could still work their way back in. So we'll look at all that. And of course, we'll break down Monday Night Football with the Dolphins and Steelers. Thanks to Triple E. Thanks to Laura. Thanks to Bailey. As always, go like and subscribe to the YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. Get the notifications for when we go live Monday through Friday. We will be back tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern. Noon Central, as we always are. We'll talk to you guys later. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.